Welcome to San Diego Newsfix, The Backstory, where we tackle important questions about journalism ethics and give you a behind-the-scenes look at our industry and our newsroom. I'm Luis Cruz. Scripps Health announced last month that physicians at Scripps Mercy Hospital named the new chief of staff. The announcement of Dr. James Grisolia's selection praises the neurologist's accomplishments and notes that he is a nearly 40-year veteran of Mercy's medical staff. But the announcement is not without controversy. Joining us now to explain are Union Tribune healthcare reporter Paul Sisson, Communities editor Tarsi Connors, Managing editor Laura Sicalo, and we begin with publisher and editor Jeff Flight. Jeff?
Yeah, thank you, Luis. And Paul, thank you for your reporting on this story, which I thought was really well done, very responsible, and really significant. But it gets into this whole area of journalism about accountability for the sins of the past. And this has become more of a pressing issue, I think, in the digital era, where the record of the past seems to follow all of us in perpetuity. And so now as journalists, we've been thrust into this position of trying to figure out where to draw those lines, I guess. So why don't we start with this story of the chief of staff, and just give me the basics on how this all played out. How did we get this story?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for chatting with me about this. So this started with a press release from Scripps Health, one of the largest health providers in San Diego. And they just announced to the community this physician has been appointed to a very powerful position. We ran just a short blurb about it in our hub section, kind of a movers and shakers column that just lets people in business know kind of about promotions and things like that. And then we heard back from a local activist very quickly who said, you know, hey, how could you guys write about this physician without bringing up the fact that he had his he was put on probation by the state medical board in 2007 for significant overprescribing to six different patients, one of whom was his wife, and who, you know, died, and an autopsy found she had many painkillers over normally prescribed levels in her bloodstream, and you know, the conclusion was she died from these drugs, many of which her husband prescribed to her, you know, and so we had a conversation about you know, whether we ought to follow up and note that, and we, you know, we concluded that this was a, you know, quite powerful position, and one that you know, is in charge of a lot of quality and doctor discipline at one of our largest medical centers. So we decided to go ahead and write something up.
Yeah. So Tarsi, tell me a little bit about, as an editor, your reporter in this case, Paul, comes to you and says, "Hey, this seems like a story. This physician was sanctioned years ago. Seems like a pretty serious matter, including the death of his wife. But how do you think that through? What about the argument on the other side? Well, he served his probationary period. There's been no further evidence of problems. How did that conversation go?"
Yeah, so I had gotten the press release, and Paul and I had talked about it, and he declined to write anything initially on it because other chiefs of staffs at other hospitals are also appointed. But then we got this email from this advocate who pointed out Dr. Graziola's past transgressions and his probation, and I went back and I looked at the press release, which noted that he was going to be taking over as head of the 1,100 member physician team. And that's a very powerful position. And during his 2-year term, the press release says, he will have a key role in driving continuous improvement in the delivery of healthcare services to the more than 200,000 patients who visit the hospital's two campuses. That, for me, spoke volumes because we have a man who's been given that great responsibility for the physicians and all of those patients that those physicians treat. So the fact that he was on probation for 7 years for overprescribing to seven people, for me, became elevated. And Paul and I both agreed that because of the elevated position that he was now taking on, that it was important to show people what his past behavior was.
Yeah, and I imagine that conversation is made easier by the severity of the situation, right? Like multiple cases of overprescription, the death of the wife, the inquiries from prosecutors at the time, was this a homicide? All of that makes it pretty serious, right?
It does. And then in doing additional reporting, the fact that he tried to get off probation, you know, after 3 or 4 years and was denied that by the medical board was again yet another affirmation that what he did was viewed as very, very serious by the medical board. This wasn't a slight.
Right, right. Now, what? Hypothetical. Where do you draw that line? I can imagine there would be transgressions by the doctor that would come to our attention that you would say, yeah, I don't know. Like, it doesn't seem that serious. What are the like criteria that you use in evaluating newsworthiness on something like that?
Well, certainly the fact that there was a death was incredibly significant. The death of his wife, the fact that six other people were being what was called deemed over prescribing of very, very powerful opiates. And that is of course, in hindsight now of our understanding of the opioid crisis, which didn't exist at the time that this particular incident took place. So that played a really big factor. And it wasn't, as the doctor said later, just a record keeping. I'm sorry, you know, this wasn't a record keeping mistake, right? If it had been a record keeping mistake, that's one thing. But this was overprescribing drugs, and especially to a family member. So there were just so many variables that pointed to it being a deeply serious offense.
Yeah, I was struck by his response. It's really taught me to take record keeping more seriously. So a little bit, it seemed, of a framing of this as a record keeping issue. But back to the heart of the matter. So I guess, you know, to me, some factors that we would consider, one would be, how remote in time is this? Things that are closer in time are probably more important to us. Well, what is the severity of the issue? Like how big is the professional trespass? How serious is the crime, if it's a crime? And how direct is the bearing on the work itself, right? The reason he's in the news. And I think here we've sort of crossed all those thresholds. I can think of other stories that we've had. There was one with a political candidate years ago in the middle of a mayoral race, and it turned out, oh, the candidate's boyfriend had been convicted of a misdemeanor crime as a youth, like 30 years ago, which had since been expunged as a conditional discharge. And in that case, using those same factors, it was like, but the candidate didn't do anything. It happened before the candidate even knew this person. It's remote in time, and the crime was very minor. So I think we wrote something very small. Whereas, you know, the people engaged in the political campaign, advocates for the opponent, were, you know, crying out, why aren't you covering this? And so it's important to have these criteria. Paul, I also wanted to touch on the family, right? So the family of the doctor's wife also spoke to you about this story. What was their opinion of how germane this was?
They gathered as a family and discussed this and just gave me kind of a joint statement that they all jointly put together, and they talked about, you know, the fact that the loss of this person has left a gaping hole in all of their lives. And they really feel like this was negligent prescribing that really took someone's life and really, you know, they called on him to step down from this position. So they certainly weren't exactly forgiving or willing to let this go. They had a quite forceful reaction, I'd say.
Yeah. And in your interactions with the doctor or his advocates, did people try to make the case to you, hey, don't write about this, it's a long time ago, it's going to cause trouble?
No, interesting. Not really. I talked to the doctor, you know, mostly over, I think exclusively over email. I think he only wanted to speak in writing. And I don't think he ever tried to persuade me not to write about it. We did write a pretty extensive story about the situation back in 2007 as well, that is still up on our website to this day.
Yeah. I thought it was a very well done story. So Laura Sacallo is the managing editor. This bigger issue of the right to forget, right? The past transgressions that remain part of the present record in perpetuity. This is an issue in journalism, right? And in here at the Union Tribune, we're working on ways to address some of that. What are your thoughts about how to balance all of these interests?
Well, it is a very big issue, both in, you know, journalism at large, and as you mentioned, in our own organization. And I don't think a week goes by that we don't get requests from individuals or people on other individuals' behalf to take stories down, to unpublish as they request, or de-index stories. And as you said, in the digital age, these stories live forever. And those requests can be for any number of reasons. They could be privacy concerns. It could be related, as in this case, to a past controversy. People concerned about the threats to their reputation. Sometimes people will say they're having difficulty getting a job or getting a loan or whatever because of the previous story that was written about them. And in this particular case, as we've mentioned, the past controversy, what this doctor experienced with the probation, did seem to us to be directly related to his current position and his current work. It wasn't some minor infraction decades ago that had nothing to do with his role as a physician. Some of the places where we have had pretty lengthy discussions have to do with things that happened long ago that are very minor in the big scheme of things and may be affecting somebody's current situation in ways that couldn't have been anticipated, maybe. And one of the things that we've talked about in this group that we're putting together at the UT has been looking at is some of this has been brought about because of the way that our paper and its predecessors handled certain kinds of reporting. You know, there were some historical biases about crime reporting, for example. Mm-hmm. And so those, to me, are those situations are a little bit different. If we reported an item about some misdemeanor because that was the standard in, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, and somebody requests that that be taken down, that we would look at a little bit differently than something that has bearing on someone's position or status currently. And so there are a lot of questions for us to wrestle with around those requests.
Yeah, I think that's an important factor. Like, we'll get requests on, hey, here, I was named in your report because I was arrested for DUI, let's say, 20 years ago. Can you take that down? And for decades, our response was, no, we're not. We're in the business of publishing news, not of unpublishing news. And were you arrested for DUI? Yeah, it was true. But then there's the further complication of like, well, of all the hundreds and hundreds of people arrested for DUI in San Diego that year, why did this poor soul end up being named? And is there a sense of fairness, or was it really sort of arbitrary that they were named? And then the case for, I think the journalistic case and the ethical case for keeping those things up begins a little bit to wear at the edges, you know, when you start looking at the arbitrariness of some of that. Whereas I think in this case, there is not that sense of arbitrariness, right? There's not another doctor with that kind of sanction against him or her who hasn't come into the public light. So a lot to think about there. Thank you for your excellent reporting, Paul. I look forward to seeing if there's any more fallout from what's happened here. And thank you, Tarsi, for your good stewardship of our report. Back to you, Luis.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And thank you to Paul, Tarsi, and Laura. You can read more of Paul Sisson's story on our website, sandiegouniontribune.com. That does it for this special edition of San Diego News Fix. For everyone at the San Diego Union Tribune, thank you very much for listening and for supporting local journalism. Have a great day, everybody.